The Functional Nerds podcast is brought to you by MapHook, a location-based social network available for free at maphook.com and as a free iPhone app. Find it, do it, share it, get hooked. MapHook.com. Hello and welcome to another episode of The Functional Nerds. My name is Patrick Hester. I'm an author, a blogger, and an all-around functional nerd. Say hello, John.
Hey. I'm John O'Neill. I write songs about science fiction and fantasy and other nerdy things. You can get most of my music for pay what you want, including free, over at johnanilio.bandcamp.com. Patrick.
Yes?
Do you have anything else you want to say before we get started here?
No, not off the top of my head.
Well, tonight we are delighted to have Mr. Timothy Zahn. Yes, that Timothy Zahn, the one that wrote all those great Star Wars books. We were really fortunate to get him, and really enjoyed having him on the show, and here's our interview with him. And on the line with us tonight, we have, this is really kind of a treat for me, we have an acclaimed author, written lots of stuff, including lots of great Star Wars books, and that is one Mr. Timothy Zahn. Tim, say hello.
Hello, nice to be here.
Thanks so much for coming on the show. You know, we get lots of books sent to us from the publishers, and when I got choices of one, the new Star Wars book that you have out, I was very excited, and I wasn't sure if we would be able to get you on the show, but I emailed your publicist and was like, hey, is there any way we can get Mr. Timothy Zahn on the show? And he said, all right, I'll see if I can make that work. So we're really excited to have you on, so thanks so much for joining us.
Well, not a problem, and the pleasure is mine.
So, lots of stuff to talk about. One of the things that that I really want to put out there first is sort of the I think the importance of your original Heir to the Empire trilogy that was put out, which I guess is 20 years now. I guess you're celebrating the 20 years.
The year was 1991. I was walking through Manchester Center in Fresno, California, and I saw a sign in the Walden bookstore that said, reserve your copy of the new Star Wars novel now. And I went,
and I think Patrick's reaction was at my own. I was about 17 or 18 at the time. And the point that I wanted to make was that, you know, I think a lot of people talk about how the Harry Potter books and how and J.K. Rowling and how that really inspired a generation of kids to read and to get them out there reading. And I don't have any evidence of this, but I can only speak to myself. I never read as a kid for pleasure. I was a good student, but I never read books for pleasure. But I was a huge Star Wars fan. And Heir to the Empire is the first book that I ever read for pleasure. The first book that I went and bought for myself. And it led me to become a reader of lots of different stuff, particularly science fiction and fantasy. But first, I wanted to thank you for writing those books to lead me on a life of reading. So thank you so much.
Well, you're quite welcome. I've gotten many letters over the years from people who said, you know, this is the first book I've read since high school, or this is the first book I've read for pleasure, just as you just said. So yeah, it's really exciting to have been part of bringing somebody who wasn't a reader into that world.
Well, that was exactly my experience. I mean, because like I said, I didn't come from a reading family. You know, it was something where I was just such a big Star Wars fan, and I think it's what Heir to the Empire was, because it wasn't just a run of the mill tie-in novel either. It was the, you know, new stories. It was a whole new thing. And we've had a couple of other authors that have written some Star Wars books. We've had John Jackson Miller, and we had a couple other guys, and talking about how, you know, building, you know, the world and how it's all canon and how it all counts. And I think that really goes a long way towards sort of the validity of these books. And you know, like I said, it started me on my quest for reading. So, you know, how did you get started with, you know, to start at sort of the beginning of that? How did you get started writing those initial Star Wars books? How were you contacted? What's the story there?
That was one of those pure dumb luck, silver platter out of the sky type of thing. What happened was, in 1988, Lou Aronica, who was head of Bantam Spectra, sent a letter to Lucasfilm suggesting that the Bantam undertake a three-book continuation of the Star Wars saga that would pick up after Return of the Jedi, which was an era nobody had been allowed to write in before. there had been some spin-off novels, but they'd all taken place before the trilogy. Lucasfilm at the time was coincidentally thinking about restarting the adult novel line themselves. So they got in touch with Lou and came to an agreement and said, find us an author. The Bantam editors got in a meeting and picked a short list of writers in their stable that they thought could handle Star Wars. Lucasfilm picked my style as what they thought would fit best. Excuse me. And I got a 4 o'clock Monday afternoon phone call in early November of 89 from my agent with the understatement of the century. We have an interesting offer here.
And when you woke up,
well,
you hit the floor.
I was quite calm and collected the half an hour, 45 minutes we chatted about the whole project. And I told him I'd tell him, I'd give him an answer the next day. And then I went off and panicked. By the next day, I had enough idea that I thought, yes, I can expand this into three books. And I went ahead and accepted.
Did you have any idea that you were setting the stage for this massive expanded universe?
Not only did not I have no idea, nobody else did either. The orders that they got in for hardcovers was way below what they had hoped to pre-sell to the bookstores. And it was clear that nobody had any idea whether the Star Wars fandom even existed anymore. I mean, remember, this is 1991. The book came out. 83 was the last movie. And the fans had been quiet. And we know now the fans had been quiet because there was nothing for them to go on to.
Right. We were starving. We were dying of thirst and hunger. We just wanted it so bad.
And because there was nothing for them to show their interest in, there was no movement anybody could detect.
Aside from a couple of crappy TV movies. About Ewoks.
Yeah. Well, we won't go there. But the point is that nobody knew. Lou Aronica was convinced from the very start this was going to be big, but no one else really was willing to bet that direction. That first printing of 70,000 copies was gone in, I think, 2 weeks, and they were scrambling to put up new hardcovers. So, yeah, the fans were out there, the fans were ready, and it really startled pretty much everybody, including me.
Now, a little question about sort of what went into writing those, because there's, you know, you in terms of the characters that weren't characters that were in the original movies, how much of are those all solely your creations? Did you work with, did you have to check in with people? Did they give you any sort of notes on, you know, what they wanted you to include, what they didn't want you to include? What was some of the process like there?
The process was I would propose something I wanted to do, and then they would tell me whether I could or not. There was never anything of, we want you to put in these plot points or these characters. For the Thrawn trilogy, I had two directives from Lucasfilm. I was to start 3 to 5 years after Return of the Jedi, and I could use anybody who had not been killed in the movies, which is about as open-ended as you can get.
Sure.
Now,
sure.
Once I sent in the outline, there were some things they wanted changed, and the final manuscript had a few relatively minor things. We caught most of the major stuff in the outline stage. So it was more of a matter of, I get to run free until I hit a boundary, and then they tell me, which
right.
is much preferable to being given a list of things I have to incorporate.
Sure, sure.
Like, oh, you know, we've got this design for this really cool new toy.
Yeah. The closest we ever came to anything like that was in, it was either Survivor's Quest or Outbound Flight. The two kind of blend together because they're a duology separated by 50 years in my mind. But they wanted me to include a character in those books that they were hoping to have in the video games, the comic books, and some of the novels, kind of a continuing character throughout all of that stuff. I don't think anything ever came of that. But they'd wanted me to put this character in, and it wasn't a problem, you know. So I did that. But aside from that, there's really been nothing of the match this or match that. Now, with the Thrawn trilogy, they also wanted me to coordinate with the West End Games role-playing game source material. So that and the original movies was really all I had to coordinate with.
They should have focused on Mara Jade for video games, because she's a badass and that would have been cool. You know, I like to point out that as far as I know, as far as I'm aware, in all the expanded universe, no one has gone back to Endor.
We go briefly back there in Dark Force Rising, second of the Thrawn trilogy.
Did you?
But we are in orbit.
Yeah, that's what I mean. I mean, no one has, like, I'm just throwing it out there. No one has gone back to the Ewoks.
Well, and you know, Tim, one of the things that you brought up was the later duology that you wrote, and then some of your more recent books. They do jump around in time. So obviously, the original Thrawn trilogy is set 3 to 5 years after the movies, but then you know, a lot of your other books go before the trilogy, in the middle of the trilogy. What is, you know, you're using the same characters but in different timelines. Now, how do you keep all of this straight in your head, kind of writing all these characters? So now your new book, Choices of One, you have Mara Jade in it, you have Luke and all the key characters in Thrawn. You've obviously written their story. You know how their story ends up. How difficult, if at all, is it to write earlier stories with them, and do you have some sort of timeline that you reference? How does that work for you?
It's really not that hard. If you understand a character and their story arc or their character arc, it's not really that hard to interpolate. I mean, I have the same thing to do with Luke, Han, and Leia, obviously, between A New Hope and Empire Strikes Back. But since I have both endpoints of that section of their arcs, I can kind of interpolate. I know kind of what Luke is like. I know what Leia's like. I know, Han's characteristics. So it's not too hard to fit them in. I do basically the same thing with the other characters. I know where Mara is when she shows up in Heir to the Empire, and I know what she was doing in that era. So I just write her that way. It doesn't really take a lot of thought. It's just kind of instinctive, I think.
Now, and in terms of the new books, were those ideas that you pitched in terms of writing stuff that takes place in between the Star Wars and Empire Strikes Back, or was that something that they asked you to do? How did those stories come about?
Well, for Allegiance, in fact, this was the last time I was at Comic-Con. We're going there again in a couple of weeks, but the last time I was there, Shelley Shapiro, the Del Rey editor, and Sue Rostoni, who has, I think, just retired from Lucasfilm's Star Wars program, we all sat down together, and they said, here is a list of the books we're planning. Here are the available slots in the Star Wars timeline. Here's our publishing schedule. What era would you like to write in, and when do you want to turn it in? So it was really open-ended. I looked around at the timeline and realized that a lot of it was getting really crowded with other writers. And the danger with that is I'm writing at the same time another writer is. We may step on each other's toes without knowing it. But nothing much was being done between A New Hope and Empire Strikes Back. We had some Marvel comics, Splinter of the Mind's Eye, maybe one or two other things. And aside from that, that 3 years was pretty open. So I picked that for Allegiance. Then when they came to me to ask for another book, I'd already been thinking of a follow-up to Allegiance with the Hand of Judgment, the five renegade stormtroopers. Mm-hmm. So it seemed a natural thing to just go ahead and add that in.
You talk about stepping on toes with other authors. It's funny that you mentioned the Marvel comics, because Marvel and DC both suffered from the movies. And, you know, they tried to do these ongoing series, and, you know, the movie would come out and they would take up after the movie and they'd do all this stuff. And then the next movie would come out and they'd be like, oh, crap, now we kind of have to retcon everything.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of stuff got damaged that same way with the prequels. Everybody had written about Boba Fett probably went out the window.
Oh, yeah.
With the prequel movies. I was lucky. I escaped pretty much unscathed. There are a couple little things that I can hand wave my way around. The thing was, which is kind of amusing, is back then the Lucasfilm people were thinking George might make more movies. I don't think he'd actually committed to them yet, and he certainly hadn't come up with a complete script. And they were so terrified that I would step on his toes or do something that ran into what he was doing. They were really careful about anything having to do with that era and telling me I couldn't do it. And as I groused about it at the time, but as a result, because they were so cautious, I did not write anything that could easily be destroyed when he came out with the prequels.
Mm-hmm.
So, retroactive thanks to them all for being so paranoid. I didn't like it at the time, but like all of us 5-year-olds, you know, who've been told you can't eat ice cream for dinner, I'm glad now that they made me do it right.
Now you brought up the Hand of Judgment, who are the five rogue stormtroopers that made their first appearance in Allegiance and now play a big role in Choices of One, the new book. My guess is, because they're great characters to have in the book, and you know, just as important as the main leads. Now, is part of the reason for coming up with a group like that because, as a reader, as someone who's going to be reading these books, you know, we know Luke's story and we know Han's story. So we know they're going to make it out of this no matter what happens. So is to have a group like those five stormtroopers taking on a lot of the role, is that there to sort of for the reader, because I don't know what's going to happen with those guys. Is that part of your thinking in creating characters like that for the book?
It's part of it, but mostly the impetus for the Hand of Judgment was the fact that in any organization, no matter how evil it is, there are a lot of the soldiers, a lot of the common people are not evil.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there were some very noble and very, very good soldiers and generals fighting under Hitler.
Mm-hmm.
And so no matter how evil Palpatine is, a lot of the troops are going to be, they've joined up because they want to dispense justice and to protect people. And they bought into, I'm sure, what Palpatine spun for everybody of how the Empire was going to be so much better for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just natural that a lot of the troops are essentially good guys, and I wanted to highlight that a little bit.
Well, I think it's they're a great group of characters, and now this is the second book that they've appeared in. Right, Allegiance was their first appearance. So, I mean, to me, I did read Allegiance when I believe that came out about a year or two ago. Allegiance, it was wasn't too long.
About 4 years ago, actually.
Oh, really? Wow,
yeah,
time
it's been
flies.
A while.
So, you know, I really enjoyed them in that, and am enjoying them in this so far. And I know we talked to Joe Schreiber, who wrote the zombie Star Wars stuff, the Death Troopers, and I can't think of the name of the other one now. And he spoke about how in Death Troopers he used Han and Chewie quite a bit, and in the other book that he put out, he kind of didn't really include any of the key characters because as he was using Han and Chewie, he said that, you know, it was hard to keep a little bit of the drama up because he knew that they had to make it out of there. So I was wondering if any of that kind of affects your writing, because I imagine as an author, when you're working in an extended universe like this where the characters do have other stories, I imagine there is a set of challenges to that that is different than writing your own original works where you can do whatever you want with the characters in your original, fully original works. But in this, you kind of have to conform. And I imagine that is quite a challenge as an author. Do you ever find that very difficult? Do you prefer writing your own stories that aren't set in the Star Wars universe and any of the other places that you've written?
There are pluses and minuses to both. I liken writing for Star Wars as being like, soccer. You've got a certain size field, you've got a certain number of players you have to play, you've got rules, you've got regulations. You can still make an exciting game of it, but it's got its limitations. Writing my own stuff is more like Calvin Ball. where I can make up the rules as I go along, as long as I'm kind of consistent with them.
I love that.
Yes, I miss Calvin and Hobbes.
I do too. And you know, I was just reading Comics Should Be Good, which is a blog about comic books, and they do this thing called Comic Book Legends Revealed. Mm-hmm. And this was about artists who like to sneak other characters into scenes in comic books. And there's one, there was an episode or an issue of X Factor with Calvin and Hobbes in it, which I thought was just awesome. I thought it was awesome. Anyway, sorry.
There's actually one in the Dark Horse comic adaptation of Dark Force Rising that is a hoot.
A little Easter egg? A little Easter egg?
A little Easter egg, yes. Which of you is in Denver? That's Patrick?
That's me, yes.
Yeah, I'm coming to a signing there in a week or so.
Oh, really? Where? Tattered Cover or Barnes & Noble?
Just a second. Torn Page, I think it is. The location and date are on it. Let's see. Let me check. I got the date. The location's on my Facebook page. I've got all that listed. It is Monday, the 25th of July.
Hmm.
Right after Comic-Con.
I'll have to figure out where that is. Maybe I'll come by and say hello.
Okay. It's, wait a minute. I've got the data right here. Just a second. It is... Back up one page. Let's see. I'm looking at it now, and I can't... Oh, there it is. The Tattered Cover.
Yep, the Tattered Cover.
In Highlands Ranch.
Ooh, nice. That's a good one.
At 7:30. So I got to pull up all of the data, the tour schedule to get all this stuff. But well, anyway, if you show up, I'll show you where it is.
Okay, awesome.
Regardless, the other point you brought up about knowing that the good guys are going to get out of this, I have a slightly different philosophy in writing than some authors. Some authors want to create tension by making the reader wonder who is going to get out alive. My own feeling, just from the things I used to like to read, is I want the good guys to win. I want them to survive unless it's absolutely necessary for someone to die. So my approach is not so much who is going to live, but to present a problem and get the reader wondering, how the heck are they going to get out of this one? So I don't look so much for characters I can kill off, though if it's necessary for the storyline, I'm willing to do it. But gratuitous killing of characters just for tension purposes, I'm not a big fan of. We can get into that in other movies and books and things. I have some strong feelings about Serenity, for example, but we don't need to go there.
Well, it's interesting that you have that philosophy, because we've had Mike Resnick on the show, and Mike Resnick has kind of become a pretty good friend of the show, and we ate dinner with him at World Fantasy this past year, and he was talking a little bit about that same point that you brought up about how sometimes when people review his books, you know, they're like, oh, it's great, but you know, pretty predictable. I knew it was going to happen. And Mike's point was that, yeah, you're supposed to. That's what these are. You know, he was like, you know, these are supposed to be sort of, you know, hero's journeys books. You're supposed to, that's what's supposed to happen. It's, but did I do it well? Like, did I write a good story? You know, so
yeah, I think I agree with him on that. It's not a matter of who lives or dies, but was the journey exciting and interesting and fun?
Exactly. And for me, those are the kinds of books, those are the kind of stories that I like. I'm very drawn to this whole idea of the hero's journey, that archetype that seems to appear in just about every culture and in every mythology. And I think it's sort of ingrained in all of us. It's in our psyche. So, you know, you don't have to necessarily reinvent the wheel when it comes to that, but you have to make characters that you care about, and you know, you have to really just get engrossed in it. And I've always enjoyed your books because of that. So thank you.
Yeah, it's differences in philosophy. Some writers make it work one way or the other. This is just the kind of thing I like to read, and so it's the kind of thing I like to write.
Sure, sure. Well, we talked a lot about the Star Wars stuff that you have out, and Choices of One. I don't know if it's is Choices of One out on the shelves yet?
No, it comes out next Tuesday.
Next Tuesday.
19th.
Well, that's when this podcast will go live. So when people listen to this, they can rush right out.
Right out. So it's today in that case, right?
Yes, exactly. So that's out. And then how about the 20th anniversary edition of Heir to the Empire? When's that set to come out?
That is coming out in September. I believe it's set for September 6th.
Mm-hmm. Now, so we talked a lot about the Star Wars stuff. So maybe if you want to talk about some of your non-Star Wars things that you have out there now that people can go and check out.
Let's see. I have for anybody who read my original Cobra books back in the 80s, we are nearing the end of a second Cobra trilogy. The Cobras are my high-tech warriors. They have their weaponry implanted in their bodies. Lasers in the fingertips, bone laminae for strength, servos, and a little nanocomputer that has pre-programmed reflexes and such. We have the first two books of the new trilogy are out. The third one comes out in January, I believe. Those books are Cobra Alliance, Cobra Guardian, and then the third one is Cobra Gamble. And I have another series of those set to go as well. I'm just finishing up the first book of a new series for Tor called Sybil's War, S-I-B-Y-L, about a girl who's kidnapped to an alien ship to be part of a work crew and discovers things are not what the crew thinks they are. The final book of my Quadrail series is set to come out probably next June, I think, about a year from now. And I will be pitching another three or four possible Star Wars ideas to Shelley Shapiro when we see her at Comic-Con.
Well, great. Well, you are a very busy man. You have a lot going on, so that's great. So where can people find you online? You mentioned you have a Facebook page. Is there any other place where people can find you online?
We really don't have a web page up and running, still working on that, but everything you'd want to know is in the Facebook page. It's just plain facebook.com/TimothyZahn. The photo section has book covers and a lot of other things. The notes section has my bibliography, tour schedule, publication schedule, and all of that. And, you know, I check it frequently and, you know, come aboard, ask questions, and I'll try to shoot answers back to you.
Well, great. Well, thanks, Tim. Thanks so much for joining us. Really appreciate it. I'm really enjoying the new book, and I hope everyone goes out and gets it.
I hope you enjoy it all the way to the end, as I hope everybody will.
Very good. Well, thank you for your time. We really appreciate it, Tim.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
Looking for interesting places near you? Find them with MapHook, a location-based social network available for free at maphook.com and as a free iPhone app in the iTunes Store. Find it, do it, share it, get hooked. MapHook.com.
And we're back. Well, we hope you enjoyed that interview. We had a great time talking to Tim, and go and check out his new Star Wars book, Choices of One, and the 20th anniversary of Heir to the Empire will be coming out in September, so go and check that out. Once again, this week, I have a couple of things out, but again, you can just go to my johnanilio.bandcamp.com site to check out all my music and download it for name your price, including free. Also, you could follow me on twitter.com/johnanilio. Patrick, what do you have going on this week?
Don't forget to tell people Celia is not at Bandcamp.
Yeah, it is.
Is it? I couldn't find it when I go there.
You have to scroll down. I don't have it on the main page if you go there. You have to go to it. Yeah, I hit it because it's, you know, it's not exactly, you know, my core stuff, so I don't want to take up too much. I'll probably end up putting it on the main page eventually once I maybe put some other tunes on that particular little album thing.
Gotcha. Ended up going to your Blogspot site to get it because I didn't see it on the Bandcamp site.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's on both. You can get that.
Gotcha. Well, you know, as usual, I'm twitter.com/atfmb, atfmb.com, shadowbites.com. We've got the comic going over there. Good stuff. Clifton Hill, congratulations. He just had another baby. Mm. Well, his wife had another baby. He was there, mm-hmm. though. I'm sure he helped. Mm-hmm. In some, you know, the way husbands help.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, congratulations. I believe it's a boy.
Very good.
Which is all awesome. I believe this is not the first child. I should ask him. I think he's got two now. So he's got his daughter and his son. So they should be done. They've got a complete set.
Mm-hmm.
You know, no need to keep going right after you get the complete set. So shadowbytes.com, facebook.com/ATFMB. Go check out SF Signal because we've got great blogs going on over there. Tell your friends about this podcast. Go to iTunes, give us a review, give us a couple stars, all that kind of good stuff. That all helps. Check out functionalnerds.com. Our contributors are doing some cool stuff. By the time this episode airs, it's going to already be done. We're doing the drink and draw thing. But I think that went live last Wednesday as of this podcast. And then the drink and draw event was actually Friday. So, yeah, it's all over with. So, never mind.
Well, very good. All right, everyone. Well, thanks for joining us this week. And we'll see you next time.
And this is what I said. George R. R. Martin is not your bitch. No matter what you write, George R. R. Martin is not your bitch. You might as well go get in line. I said, if you think the books are entertaining,